Yeah, they hate, but they broke them. And when it's time to pop, they have no show. Yeah, I'm pretty, but I'm local.
Thank you for tuning in to The Pure Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, D Nice.
How do you call me that?
That's your name.
That's not my name.
That's your name. I know how to pronounce it. It's D Nice.
Let me tell you something, Key and Peele. Not my name.
What's your name is then?
My name is Denise from the French Denise. I don't know what my name is, but it ain't D Nice. I tell you that.
Because you ain't nice. That's why it ain't D Nice. Denise,
you call me Denny's. Like the restaurant. Like I got a chain of restaurants. Denny's.
Denny's. I can call you that. I can do that. So just to mention, because we talked about it last week, Kanye is officially out of the hospital and at home. We wish him a full recovery, a holistic and full recovery. And that's where I want to start this week, in the rap game. So DMX felt the need at a concert to get in his feelings and explain to the world that he is not gay. He ain't sucking no dicks. Because what did he say? Not like what you may been heard in the industry. I ain't sucking no dicks. Okay, DMX, thank you. Like, can we just have a concert?
I just want you to know I don't even like ass play. What? I just asked you if you want coffee or tea.
I'm not really sure what happens in the hip hop game, but someone felt the need to write an article this week. Someone who is also working at BYP 100, which comes up quite often. We all know that those are some very woke Black queer feminist women running the joint. And she wrote an article on Young M.A. Ooh, look, I love me some Young M.A.
Like the neck tattoos? You like those neck tattoos? You like that, huh?
She's too young for me. I can't help her. But.
Keyword young.
I'm just kidding. No, so she's what, 23, 24 years old. She's been out and making music for a minute. She's from Brooklyn. And she kind of went viral in 2014 already with this freestyle that she did. It was dope on a track called Brooklyn, Chirac Freestyle. And that video had something like 7 million hits. And then she came out with this song this year. Ooh, another video on YouTube with, you know, at I don't know how many millions of hits. She was on The Breakfast Club. Lee Daniels tried to get her on to Empire, which she declined.
Why she declined?
She declined because she's smart.
Okay.
So one, she was worried that if she goes on Empire, people will think that Empire was her start.
Yeah. And they would have thought that.
They would have thought that, right? And that she would have been, I can't remember what the name was that her character was going to have, but something, it was funny. It was a good name. It was Betty something. She was worried about that. So she was already leaning towards declining, and then they sent her over the contract. And the contract on the music tip, her lawyer was like, you won't own any of the music you make on this show.
Oh, no.
She was trying not to be messy. She, like, the Breakfast Club folks asked her this, right? She was going to leave that out. So apparently Quincy, P. Diddy's son, was also not allowed because P. Diddy was like, have you read the contract? That's a no, son.
P. Diddy was like, this is like a contract I made. Lucky. You ain't going to sign one of these. Like,
no, Quincy, no. I own your music, not Lee. Mm-hmm. So the reason I want to talk about Young M.A., though, is Young M.A. is a very out, masculine of center, lesbian, and going, ain't no closets near Young M.A.
She don't fit in the closet. She don't fit in the closet. Nope. She's too much. She's too much. All right, go ahead.
And so the criticism is that her music is just as misogynist and just as heteronormative and just as this and that as anyone else's, as any man coming out of hip hop. Now, I will say her older stuff, yeah, she was talking about, you know, I can't remember what she calls her nine, but, you know, she does talk quite a bit about that. But she says in her new music, that's not the case. But in this song that's so popular, you know, talking about low blows and deep throating, is that misogynist, though? Can a woman not talk about another woman giving her head without it being misogynist?
I kind of wish that's where the article had spent at least a paragraph on, because it just comes off with this premise of, okay, so Young and May's music is misogynistic, and that is truth. And now we're going to go from that. And then it talks about what does it mean to have this queer woman also uphold misogyny. And I thought it was a well-written article, except for the fact that for people that don't know why you would be thinking this, you don't elaborate on she is misogynist because X, Y, and Z, right? Her lyrics, her this, her that, whatever, right? But something. So I'm not really sure like what the main points that proved misogyny was for this particular author. I will say, so Young M.A. Came up in a team, and part of her team was making movies. And so she used to make these horrible dramedies. they weren't, there was no comedy involved. There were these lesbian dramas. And because I'm the kind of person, I am so star for like queer representation in media. And I'm also really star for like Black queer women, like in media. I was like, hell yes. I've seen whole situations of her episodes. I don't even know what you want to call these things. They were like, I don't know. I thought they were funny. They were funny to me, but they shouldn't be funny to you. They were serious attempts on Young and May's part to act. And shut up. anyway, her whole kind of stilo back then was kind of, you know, the stereotype, I should say, of this kind of like drug dealing, gun wielding, butch, stone top, who gets with these like, you know, loose strippers, overly sexualized, and then, you know, performs masculinity in a way that that you would expect any male rapper to perform masculinity, right? So that was my first introduction to Young M.A., is watching her in her movies, right? In the sense of that old Young M.A., you say the new stuff, I don't know what she got on there now.
Well, what I'm saying is Young M.A., again, is young, right? She's 24. Right. She right. is, I guess.
She was 23 earlier in the episode. She had
No, I said she's 23 or 24. Okay. So okay. I think she has turned 24, but I'm not sure this year. But she considers 2-3 years ago a long time ago. Right. Mm-hmm. Those were her words. A long time ago, I was making music like that. And they were like, oh, when was that? She was like, you know, two to three years ago. So mm-hmm. that's a long time for her. And it is a long time for someone who is.
It's only been an adult for 5 years.
Right. Right. And she seems to be carving out her path. Like she's, you know, she was, I don't know if she's signed now, but she was unsigned all of this time. She's making this stuff independently. She's figuring the game out as she goes along. And this is someone who says their favorite rapper is 50 Cent. Like, she was asked who influenced you, who introduced you, or who was that artist that made you say, I want to make music. And she, and you know, this is the Breakfast Club. So they think, is she going to say something like Grandmaster Flash or something? No, she's a millennial. She said 50 Cent. So, and at the same time, I personally, when I see her in interviews, and I think the Breakfast Club interview is just a great interview because she was dealing with all kinds of stuff. Like, you know, I know they're trying to be funny and whatnot, but DJ Envy was off the charts. He was asking, well, how did, you know, I heard that some butches don't like their female parts touched. You like your female parts touched? Like,
so,
that's so.
He's a mess.
And she was like, you all up in my, nah, I'm not talking about that like that, right? Or when she was explaining how she met Lee Daniels because she was sitting down with Swizz Beatz. You know, she was dropping her names. She was sitting down with Swizz Beatz. Lee Daniels comes in, here's Charlamagne the God, before she could tell the story. Oh, you met him at Pride? You met him at Gay Pride? Ha ha ha. So she's not only dealing with, you know, she was asked, do you write your own rhymes? She's dealing with all of these things that every woman has to deal with. She's dealing with all these things because of her sexuality that she very openly stands by. And then she was also talking about, she's over this now, but she was talking about how she gets you know, used to hear, oh, you might have to wear a dress. And it was something she considered. And now she's like, nah, 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 this is just who I am. Whereas Dej Loaf, who, you know, was huge last year, has a big Instagram following, is a Black female. I don't know if she considers herself an MC or whatever, but she does, you know, she does rhyme. She also does a bit of singing. She's openly bisexual. Lil Wayne is on a track talking about, oh, after I do you, I'm gonna do your friend, whatever, whatever. And she gets forced into dresses, and that's exactly what it looks like. Like, she gets forced into dresses, and she's
doesn't chosen. Look natural.
No, doesn't it
look,
doesn't look
natural. Doesn't look like it was a free will. Sound mind and body was not involved.
I mean, like, you know, now it's judging by her Instagram, she's done it enough where she's, I guess, feeling more comfortable with it. But it seems to me to be a makeover. This is not how she came out. She came out in sneakers, jeans, and a cap, rapping about being this and being bisexual and life and whatever. And now, you know, she's like, not Trina necessarily. She's not talking about the smell of her pussy. But I think it's really hard. But if you look at the MCs in the game, they were all quite femme. The ones who really made the game at the end of the 90s, Foxy Brown, Lil' Kim, today, Nicki Minaj, they are all, I would say, definitely identifying as femme.
Yeah, they wanted to come back for Moni Love, MC Light, Queen Latifah.
Oh, yes, Lord.
Yes, Lord. Had to come back from that.
So again, I always ask myself, yes, there's something. If a woman is talking about hitting a woman, she's no better than anyone else. But if a woman is talking about her sex with a woman, I'm not saying there's a double standard, but can a woman do that without it being called misogynistic?
Yeah, I mean, one rapper that gets away with this a lot is Andre 3000, right? Like, he's always talking about fucking. Always.
I just want to make you come up.
But he doesn't do it in the similar style that's like gangster rap style, right? So, you know, people miss that a lot. You know, that, really, Andre 3000 just talking about fucking. You know, like, a lot. Like, in most songs. And they just let it happen. I think that there's also the stigma that comes with doing it in this, like, aggressive rapping way that she, her style of rap. Specifically, I think that people tend to put that in this, like, okay, automatically misogynistic thing. Now, is she talking about hitting women? I'm asking.
Not like, no, not physically hitting. No, no. She's talking about hitting that.
Oh, like that. Okay.
But she's not talking about, no, no, no. She's never talking about raising a hand. I personally haven't heard that in her lyrics, no. Her lyrics, you know, her lyrics are formed by where she's from. She's from Brooklyn. Her older brother, who was very close to her, was killed by someone he was close to. He was stabbed to death. So she's very close to these people that he rolled with. She's very close to her mom. Her mom knew she was gay before she was. Like, her mom was like, you know, it would be okay if you just... And she was like, no, I'm not. So she had, you know, she has this supportive background that she comes from. She has the greatest, when she talks about her mother, she has nothing but the greatest respect for her mother. She talks about how she played with Barbies and, like, would cut their hair and, like, you know, have them rubbing up against each other. You know, normal things. Hey.
Wow.
Who didn't?
Wow. That's a different kind of Degrassi Junior High. That's what's going on there?
I don't know. I guess I like the fact that Young Aunt May is just forging her own path. And maybe I'm missing, right. Maybe I'm missing the misogyny in it. But
so you think that she might just be getting shade because she's talking about being a freak.
Yeah.
And she's talking about being a freak in this dom sort of role. And that may be getting confused with misogyny.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I know how I talk.
Ooh.
When the mic is off.
Okay, so you know what? I'm gonna talk a little bit about what I saw as kernels of truth in that article.
Okay.
See, you didn't think I was gonna go there. You didn't think I was gonna go there.
I got a little nervous.
Well, that's why you hold the keys to editing, my love. That's why you edit everything.
Indeed.
Because you do. Get real nervous. What I saw as the kernel of truth, and not only the kernel, it was a good article, I felt.
It was a good article.
By and large, was that representation is not enough. This idea that I exist in the world as this queer woman and that's a radical thing, and that's enough isn't enough, right? So, you know, we've just saw that with our conversations about white women in the last US election, the sense that, okay, I'm a woman in the world and I have to deal with sexism, and me just existing as a woman, maybe in a corporate world or wherever, is enough. It isn't really, right? Because you could still perpetuate sexism. You could still perpetuate misogyny as a woman. We know this. And so can Young M.A. That's why I wish that she had gone another article. And maybe there will be a follow-up article by her, since this article got a lot of attention, saying, oh, okay, so I just called someone a misogynist. Why did I do that? Mm-hmm. Why did, you know, I think that the, I think the labels just aren't nuanced enough, right? Because Young M.A. may have done some misogynist things.
Yes.
May have said some misogynist things, but to then say wholesale, Young M.A. is misogynist, I feel doesn't do complexity of character enough justice. But she is right in the sense of, the author is right in the sense that Young M.A. being queer and out and in the world is, does not make Young M.A. Automatically a, you know, the activist we need.
No, and that's the thing, right? And, again, she's 24 years old and she's rapping about what she knows. From what I understand, you know, she played football and things. So she grew up around dudes. And at the same time, she holds her own when confronted with people like DJ Envy and Charlamagne Tha God, who have nonsense coming out of their mouths. At the end of the article, Samantha Master writes, quote, what Young M.A. means for the future of Black women in rap has yet to be determined, but we must vigilantly continue to make space for people like her while holding her accountable for the toxicity of messages she pushes around women, end quote. And I think what bothers me about that, even though I think it's a great way to end the article, what bothers me about it is then she would have to talk about the entire message, because I personally don't think her biggest message is around women. Her biggest message is around how she rolls with her crew. Like, when you listen to her rhymes, if you're not only listening to what she's released this year, if you've listened to anything from, like, 2014, when she first really blew up on the scene, most of her rhymes are about, like, you know, like I said, holding that nine, got somebody next to her, y'all ain't, you know, dykes be loud in her face, and then they're not ready when she's ready to pull. And she even at the same time says that she's not, like, a gangbanger. So the message of toxicity is not specifically around women. It's just in general, the narrative that we hear coming out of New York rap.
This article, if I'm not mistaken, is written by a queer femme woman, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. So can we talk a little bit about Butch Identity just for a second?
Sure.
I know it's not on the agenda. Last week, I went to the Transitions Festival for Film Festival for Queer and Minority Film Festival. There was a session there where a woman was talking about Butch Identity, and it was a really basic thing. I won't get into it, a basic lecture about Butch Identity. But at the very beginning, she asked a room full of mostly queer women to raise their hands if they identified as Butch, and two out of a room of maybe 50 women raised their hand. Now, if you looked around, as me, myself as a queer woman, if I looked around at them, I would say easily 50% queer Butch woman. 50% at least, right? And, but, you know, again, I am in a place where, you know, dress down is a thing. So that could be it. It could be that my lens is skewed, but and I can't identify.
Your lens is skewed because you'll be calling me. Anyway.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So all I'm saying is that there is a visible, there's definitely a urge to distance themselves from butchness. And I've been thinking a lot in this last week about why that is. And I've been thinking about my own experience with queer women and butches in general, butches who I love. I absolutely love me some butches. But I have seen butches and trans men perform masculinity in ways that were very toxic, right? Like that were akin and would rival any of your sexist man on the street. And I think that as a kind of like a response to that, a blowback to that, there has been this distancing from butchness as a gender identity. And there has been this tendency to equate butchness with wholesale with misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really unfortunate. Not all butches behave that way. And it's not a hallmark of butch identity to have misogynistic tendencies. But I think that, let me complete whole sentences. When there are things that we will brush off in men that we will, that would be unforgivable in women. Misogyny is one of those things.
Absolutely. That's but all. Everyone's growing up in the same society, right? So.
Exactly. So we are not immune from misogyny just because we happen to be born female identified, right? Like, so or female assigned at birth, or that's the new.
Whatever the proper way the to say it today.
The terminology right now, female assigned at birth.
All so right. Moving on. And we've taken up a bit of time with Young M.A., so we'll keep it short.
Ooh,
but I do want to talk really briefly about this interview that Trevor Noah did with Tomi Lahren. And the reason I want to talk about it is not so much to talk about her and her platform, because I think she's disgusting. But I want to talk about, is it useful at all? Just really briefly, when we have something like Comedy Central's The Daily Show, that is, of course, political and news satire, does it serve any particular purpose to have someone like Tomi Lahren on the show? Now, granted, when Jon Stewart was on the show, he had Bill O'Reilly several times. Mm-hmm. And they had fairly and constructive conversations, because Bill O'Reilly can do that when he's forced to. But Tomi Lahren, who is a millennial, she's 24 years old. She's from Rapid City, South Dakota. And she's grown this platform, I don't know how or why, by speaking hate about everyone mm-hmm. from Colin Kaepernick to
racist
Black Lives
rants.
Matter.
Yeah, mostly Black, racist rants.
Mostly yeah. racist rants, right? She compares Black Lives Matter to the Ku Klux Klan. She says Kaepernick shouldn't whine because he's making millions of dollars. Nonsense, right? But why invite someone like that on the show then? I mean, that's what you're going to get. The type of interview that she gave, he did call her out on certain things, but it only serves his viewers. It only serves the liberals, as they continue to be called. No, mm-hmm. no right wing person is going to watch that show and be like, oh yeah, that made sense. Now I get how her double standards work. You see what I'm saying? So like, why even have the interview?
Well, I've seen a lot of people finally say, you know, Trevor Noah has finally found his late night voice. I think that this has been a struggle. The show has been a struggle for Trevor Noah. And to have this show in this moment has been a struggle for Trevor Noah, because, you know, here he is as the South African man hosting the show at this height of this massive American election
mm-hmm.
and taking over from someone who just became a hallmark of comedy through the show.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people that left the show when Trevor Noah came on and have never really fully connected with him. Like, what is he doing? Where is his voice? And I think that in this interview with Tony Sill, whoever.
Shade.
Mm-hmm. She who shall not be named. He was able to maybe make a case for why him specifically in his body with his point of view would be the right person to be at the helm of the show at this moment.
That does make sense. I'll leave it with your wisdom. In our second segment, as many of, or pretty much everyone woke up to the news, I know I woke up to it because I had a BBC update. I had a Tagesschau from Germany update. I had several updates announcing the death of Fidel Castro this past weekend. He died at the age of 90. For people who have lived on another planet for years, Fidel Castro was the radical revolutionary who governed the Republic of Cuba for 47 years as prime minister. Then he became the president, and he, you know, was the last standing Marxist-Leninist of the world. He was the last standing person to show the uselessness of the embargo placed on his country, because while everything crumbled around him from the Berlin Wall to the Soviet Union, he stood.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of mixed emotions. Justin Trudeau from Canada gave a very warm statement about the loss of Fidel Castro, which wasn't surprising because his father was close to Fidel Castro. But of course, that was a huge upset, supposedly, on the political main stage. Everyone else was a bit more reserved, unlike the cheetah, who was unhinged, as he always is. However, the voices of Blacks around the world were quite differentiated in how they saw the death of Fidel Castro. Most people of the darker hue really appreciate, respect, and genuinely love what they believe he did for Black people around the world. So, as many of you know, he sent troops to Angola when the apartheid tried to roll in and helped push apartheid back out. Apartheid from South Africa, right? He sent doctors all around the world, but especially to African countries, most recently during the Ebola outbreak, to help countries that otherwise would not have had the means to engage and contain their crises. He even offered Bush support during Hurricane Katrina, because Cuba has done such great research in understanding how hurricanes work and what needs to happen after a hurricane has hit land. Of course, Bush declined, and we all know what happened after Hurricane Katrina in Louisiana. So this is a person who is highly revered by many Black people. And my question is that fair? Oh, of course, I forgot to mention, and Assata Shakur has lived her life since escaping prison many, many years ago in Havana, and there's never been a discussion about turning her over. So is it justified? What do you
feel about it? It's extremely justified, I think.
Extremely?
Okay, it's extremely justified.
Okay.
Ooh, I'm gonna really get into it. I was just having this discussion the other day. I did an interview for Black Austria, and with a African woman that was born here, and we were talking, and who is now moving to London. And we were talking about how nationalism is less important than Blackness, because wherever you go, you're Black, and your nationhood or whatever passport you carry becomes less important immediately. That has been the case with me. Maybe that would have been different if I had moved to another part of the world, but that has been the case with me, having moved as an American Black person, having moved to Germany and then now living in Austria. That being said, when we look at him as Black Americans, we're looking at him through the lens of Black people, not necessarily through the lens of American people. And even if I look at it through the lens of an American, I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, what did Cuba do to America? I mean, America has a torture camp on Cuba called Guantanamo Bay, you know, as a permanent FU to the Cuban people who don't want it there, you know? So that being said, I think Castro has done tremendous things. The biggest voice against him are mostly white, upper-class people that immigrated to Miami, who have a lot of political pull, who don't like Castro and never will. Never did, never will, right? And he alienated an elite class when he came into power, and they have paid him back for that, with their political voice in the United States being strong and being echoed throughout the world.
Surely, but I'm not coming at this as an American. I'm coming at this as a Black person. Yes, mm-hmm. He met Malcolm X. Yes, he was close to Nelson Mandela. Yes, mm-hmm. He did what he did in the Angolan Civil War, and so on and so forth, right? But at the end of the day, what he thought would work, and this is because he is not Black, was right. To say, we're going to make racism illegal.
Right? Yeah,
and I will say most communist countries didn't even bother with that. Most communist countries, even though communism supposedly had no color, communism was as racist, if not more racist, than any other country, right? The Soviet Union is known for the racism, the anti-Semitism, right, and so forth. So mm-hmm. He thought, we make racism illegal and it goes away. It didn't go away. And today, if you look at the people of Cuba, you will find disproportionately that it is Black Cubans who are in poverty. It is Black Cubans who don't have access. It is Black Cubans who do menial work while others live off of the dollar economy, because they have these parallel economies. So it's hard for me to be excited about, and while I do have the greatest respect for the revolution that he started and the mm-hmm. way that he countered and so forth, but as a Black person, it's hard for me to say, oh, Cuba and Haiti, and you know, those were the two great hopes of that part of the world, because, and one of that being because of Castro. I'm sorry, I don't see it. If Castro can't handle the racism at home, and Castro can't do anything about the fact that Blacks are disproportionately...
Most white men can't. I mean, let's be real. I mean, Castro at least had the acknowledgement of racism on his lips, but yes. No, he didn't have a strategy to full on tackle it. And so it was left up to individual Cubans to implement this in their society, and they did what they always had done. However, he did have a all boats rise policy, right? So that meant that if you were a smart Black person, you could be a doctor with no debt. You could be a lawyer with no debt. This is not at all possible in the United States. You did have full literacy. You do have full health care. That's not happening in the neighbor, the United States. So I'm with Kaepernick on that. Like, yeah, I'm not saying that he got everything right. He didn't get queerness right initially. No. But nobody was getting queerness right when he was getting queerness wrong. Nobody. Mm-hmm. Nobody. No country you could have gone to would have been had a gold star on queerness. None of them. So he didn't get that right. He didn't get sexism right automatically. He didn't. I mean, this is like an old dude who ended up ruling for so like 50 years. And surviving over 600 assassination attempts. You know, there's a tremendous amount of problems with knowing what is real information and what is misinformation, because you have the mightiest country in the world putting all of their disinformation campaigns on you.
And yes, but his daughter, one of his daughters wrote an autobiography. It's amazing. Anyone should read it who can. And she talks about the oppressive nature of her father, who then tried to lock her into an apartment. And she would masturbate in front of the window because she knew that she was being watched by intel. She would do it just to make him angry. So I think it's dangerous how easily the narrative goes, especially in all media, of course. But what I've been reading coming out of alternative media written by Black journalists is this romanticization of who Castro was and what he stood for Black people.
Look, I don't romanticize it, but I do understand the significance of it. It's massive. Doesn't mean he was perfect. Doesn't mean he got things right all the time. And it doesn't mean that he didn't get things, certain things, key things horribly wrong. But the batting average is so impressive.
But how can we quantify that when someone, and this is going to be an extreme example and it might make some people angry, but if we look at Chile, right? Mm-hmm. And Pinochet, he did amazing things for Chile's economy and this and that and the other, but he also killed thousands of people in the process. Castro, similarly, did amazing things for the revolution and whatever, but he became a true Marxist-Leninist in that he began killing anyone who was opposing him. So, yes, he did some good things.
I think that this is where I'm from, a country that does this as a matter of course, right? They kill people that oppose them all the time, you know, and they put people on the no-fly list. They destroy people's careers and lives. They mass incarcerate whole communities of people. You got communities that have no clean water. You have communities that are being poisoned systematically, and kids being born with birth defects, preventable things being the cause of death for many poor people in the population. So while I do understand that targeted killing, and there is targeted killings by the U.S. also, right? Like, so in the sense, this is the nature of nationhood, right? Nations do this. This is what they do. Just because he's doing it as a Marxist-Leninist doesn't make it any more egregious than someone doing it under the guise of democratic capitalism or whatever system of government they have. Nations do this all the time. So if you want to talk body counts, I don't really think that his body count, even if you look at a per capita basis, can rival some of the greatest nations in the world, or what we consider some of the greatest nations in the world. I think that.
Yeah, but is that his, a standard?
The thing is that we don't have a perfect standard. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there is a perfect standard. Mm-hmm. But what I did really appreciate Cuba for was offering alternatives, offering some sort of political diversity, like biological diversity. Political diversity is essential. It is essential. This idea that we can only all be capitalists, that we can only all have democratic nations, because democracy and representative democracy, as it's done by a lot of Western nations, is the only way that one can have any kind of nationhood and government and civil society, is false. It just is. And he proved that. And that is why we're so excited about him, is because we grew up in a system, as a Black American person, I'll say again, I grew up in a system that clearly was meant for my destruction. It was clearly not meant for people like me to get ahead or to even survive in a lot of cases, depending on what your income bracket was, where you were happened to be born. That being the case, you know, I was also told that I was in the best system, the only system that was valid, the only system that could work and was true. And right across the water, there was someone proving them wrong, that there are other systems. There's another way of being. I'll always appreciate that. Always.
And in our third segment, what are we looking forward to? What are we excited about? Hit me.
Hit me. Okay, so all of the holiday celebrations that are happening here with the Black community, mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to it. We got on Sunday, a Black Women's Brunch.
Nice. On
Thursday, we got a after work mixer at Betty's Place again, the international restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm looking forward to, is finally doing the little wind down, wrap up. And I'm looking forward to my personal travel you don't want to hear about.
Nope.
All right. What are you looking forward to, Miss Cece?
So similarly, there are a lot of things happening leading into the holidays. There's a Women of Color and Allies. I don't know why the allies got to come, but there's a Women of Color. I'm just saying. There's a Women of Color group meeting coming up pretty soon. There's another person of color. What are they calling it? Cutie Pocamus. There's like a party that apparently had its first go last year. So they're going to continue the tradition this year of Cutie Poc Xmas. And they're calling it Cutie Pocamus. That's cute. And on just this coming Sunday, I will be hosting yet another urban retreat, a day retreat of yoga, mindfulness at a smaller venue. We have room for up to 12 people, a part of my project, Oya Body, Mind, Spirit Retreat. So I look forward to hosting women, grounding them going into the holiday season, because as we know, it can be rough. So not so much looking forward to this truly, genuinely cold weather that has now set in, but there are a lot of things keeping my heart warm, so I'm excited about that.
Yes, yes. I have German language things, but I don't know. Should I announce that? No? Okay.
Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter, @TheQueerTruth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. You can also support us by going to our Patreon site, patreon.com/TheQueerTruth. Until next time, peace out.